holding on Pegasus. I'm at Aleph. Still a few days behind. We'll see what we can do to catch up. That's Chen. We're in the middle of a discussion. We started a discussion. The Gemara started a discussion yesterday between Rav Dichon and Rish Lakish about the question: when do we say that things can be batal and when not? When we talk about truma, about truma tmeya falling into truma tahara, or chatas falling into chatas. One thing we were discussing the idea that according to Rish Lakish, anything which even sometimes is sold by numbers, such as slices of meat, cannot be bottled. So then how do we say, we quoted a braisa that said that you can have a case where according to the Chachamim, it can be bottled. We said it would have to be that nimoicha, that it dissolved. So the meat dissolved, therefore already we can say it's bottled. So that's, we're holding seven lines from the top of Peveh Zimmer Aleph. Okay, so the question is, Ulu Rish Lakish, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. So according to Rish Lakish, what is the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa of the Braisa? So again, to review, the Braisa, which was on Pei Aleph on the Beis, had said that you had a slice of Chatas, which was Tameh, which therefore nobody is allowed to eat, got mixed up with a bunch of slices of Chatas, which are Tahar, or the same thing with Lacham Aponim. Then we say Tala, that it can be Batal. You're allowed to take out one piece and consider that to have been the Tameh one. On the other hand, then we said if it was a slice of chatas that was tahar, which therefore Kohen is allowed to eat, that gets mixed up with a bunch of slices of cholin that anybody should be allowed to eat, then we say loital, dibre hakol loital. Then we say everybody agrees that you can't think about it. The question is, according to the
chatas, you cannot.
No. So we're saying it's not chatas versus not. It's a question whether the chatas was tame, where therefore nobody is allowed to eat the slice that fell in, versus, and we're saying therefore it can be bottled in a bunch of slices of chatas that are tahar. Therefore, we'll allow Kohenim, in other words, to eat the mixture. Or rather, we take out one from the mixture, consider that to be the Tomei one, and the Kohenim can eat the rest. Versus, we said, if all of it was Tahar, but one of it was Chatas, and the rest of it was Cholin, then we say Loital. We say we just have to allow the Kohenim to eat the whole thing. We can't allow a Yisrael. We can't even take out one piece and allow the Yisrael to eat the rest, because he might be eating Chatas. Question is, Rish Lakish, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa, what's the logic for the difference according to Rish Lakish? Rabbi Yechanan, we can understand. We said Rabbi Yechanan didn't have this whole concept that we're talking about, that the meat dissolved. So the difference is in the ratio, you have to be a hefsid meruba. Nobody's going to be allowed to eat it. You're going to lose all those slices of meat, and nobody's going to be allowed to eat them. So therefore, we're allowed to be bottle. In the second part of the braisa, since after all, a kohen can eat the mixture. The slice chatas that fell in was tahar. Then it's only a hefsid muat. You're losing out, okay, because the chatas meat is cheaper than regular meat because there's rules on it. You can only eat it a certain period of time and only in Yerushalayim, etc. But it's only hefsid muat. So according to Rabbi Yechanan, we understand the difference. According to Rabbi Yechanan, in principle, any of them can be bottled, but the Chachamim are not going to allow you to be mevatel it in a case where it's only hefsid muat. The question is, Rish Lakish, the question is, according to Rish Lakish, who's saying that anything that's also deraisa can't be bottled. Only because it got dissolved, do we say that? So what's the difference? Either way, in the ratio, you don't have the actual slice is not identifiable anymore because it's all dissolved into the stew over there. Same thing in the sefer. What's the difference? Amr of shisha b'ed navidi, ratio of tumas mashkins abanan sefer deraisa. The difference is the first part of the braisa is talking about that the meat only became tame by tumah de rabbanan. For example, you had that you had liquids that were tame that touched a keli midaraisa, nothing happened. Midarabbanan liquids that become tame can only be mitame other food. They can't be mitame a keli, as we learned way back in Psachim. Midarabbanan they're mitame a keli. In fact, they make the liquids themselves are considered a rishon l'tumah midrabanan. They make the keli become a shein of the tumah, and then the keli touch the meat. So midaraisa, the meat's not tame at all. So therefore, there's no reason to be going there. Safer deraisa. Whereas the second part is talking about that the meat actually became not that it became tame. The sefer is talking about the chatas is also to a gar midaraisa. Nothing became tame. But in the Reisha, the only reason we would say that the piece of Chatas that fell in was offered to eat, with the whole Isser on it, was only the Drabonon. In the Sefer, the Isser is a regular Isser Dereisha. Because Chatas. Question is, Aval Trumas Sheretz, Ma'ilai Talis. So what you're telling me then, that if the piece of Chatas that fell in had become Tomei with a Truma Dereisha, for example, touching a Sheretz, then what you're saying, according to the Shlokesh, would not be Bottle? Then, Adatoni Sefer, then why is the Sefer bringing in a new case? We're saying that if a slice that's Tahar gets mixed in with a bunch of slices of Chulin that are Tahar, we're saying you can't be Mavatal at Loitala.
In the case of a Sheret.
No. What we're saying is like this. If we're saying, according to Rish Lakish, that there's a difference in the source of the Tumah,
right,
then why are we having, then why is the Braisa distinguishing between Tame versus Tahar? Let it distinguish within Tumah itself what the source of the Tumah is. Let the Braisa be making, according to Rish Lakish, a distinction within Tumah itself. When are we saying that it can be Bottle? Is, first of all, if it dissolved, and second of all, it was only Tumah v'drabanan. But if it became Tumah d'oraisa, then we would say that not, it wouldn't be Bottle. And again, the answer is, like we said yesterday, Tahara v'Tahara sadifalei. We would, Rish Lakish would say that Braisa would rather mention a case, would rather bring in the case where you have one Tahar piece getting mixed in with a bunch of other Tahar pieces. First of all, Rashi says because, what, in other words, well, Truma and Cholin or Chatas and Cholin, whatever, because then it's more of a Chiddush. You would think that Tahar in Tahar you should be more likely to say it's Batal, and nevertheless we're not. Or Tosfos says that the difference is that it's a different kind of chiddush. We're saying even though you would think maybe in the case of a piece of tahar chatas that got mixed in with a bunch of pieces of tahar cholin, it's only also to zarim. Unlike if the one piece was tameh, where it's also to everybody, you would think therefore maybe it should be mekel. No, we're still machmer. So the reason why we're bringing in this new case, not because according to Rish Lakish it's true, according to Rish Lakish it depends, even within Tumah itself you can have a case of a Tumah slice which will not be bottle. But according to him, the Braisa would rather explain, you want to know something, not only when the slice is Tumah can there be a case where it's not bottle, but even where the slice is Tahar there will be a case where it's not bottle.
Because it's different meaning.
Not because it's different meaning, it's all the same meaning, it's all meat.
But because
it's something, it's an Issa Daraisa, and an Issa Daraisa, according to him, is not Batal. Only it's only Asa Vajabanan, would it be Batal? That's answer number one. Rabba Amar, Reisha Issa Lav, Sefer Issa Karis. Rabba says, here's a different answer. The first part of Braisa is, when we're saying a piece of Chatas, which is Tomei, now when you get down to it, a person who's Tomei who eats Chatas is Chayav Karis. But if a person himself is Tahar and the Chatas is Tameh, it's only an Issur Lav to eat it. The person gets Malkus. But there's no Issur Karis or Mrs. Basin involved. Whereas the Sefer is talking about a Yisrael or Zor eating Chatas, which is an Issur Karis. A Zor eating Kachim is also only a Lav. No, the difference is in the Sefer we're talking about what's gonna happen. If he winds up thinking, well, you know what, this whole pot full of meat over here is all cholin, I can eat it whether I'm tameh or tahar. If he ends up eating it betumah, then he will be chayav karis, because a person who eats chatas, which is tahar, when he himself is tameh, is chayav karis. So that's the difference. The difference is that the first part of the braisa, there's no way that you can reach an issur karis. Because once the meat is tummy, that's it. Nothing happens. Whether you eat it potato or betumah doesn't matter. You only over on Issur Lav. Whereas the Sefer, since everything was tahar, you could wind up where you yourself eat it when you're tummy and become chayiv karis. Which Rashi then explains that we're talking both cases would have to be, again, that we're talking according to Rish Lakish, according to this explanation of Rabbah's, we'd have to say that both cases are talking about the meat got dissolved. Because again, according to Rish Lakish, if the meat is still there, but it won't be bottle anyway. Once they dissolve, still we'll make this distinction between whether both of them are off the Daraisa, but we'll still make a distinction between whether it's an Issur Lav or Issur Karis. Or, Rashi gives a second explanation that we don't have to be talking about that it dissolved. The difference is that Rish Lakish would say that when it comes to Chatas or Truma, a Zor eating it will be Chayiv Misa B'nei Shemayim. Misa b'nei shemayim is almost nesuyas as kares. Whereas again, the first case over here, we were talking about truma tmeya or whatever, there's only an isur lav. Okay, question is, why? We have something towards the end of the Masechta where Rabbah himself says, okay, on the side over here it says actually Rava says, but whatever, that when it comes to an Isur Daraisa, it doesn't matter whether it's an Isur Lava or an Isur Karis.
In terms of what?
In terms of that if the Rabbanan are Choshesh, or if the Rabbanan are, if we're going to say that we're not going to allow the Isur to be Batal, then it doesn't matter. When it's an Isur Daraisa, it doesn't matter what kind of Isur Daraisa. So what is he saying? What is he himself saying that the Braisa will be distinguishing between Lav and Karis? Kasha. Third answer, Rav Ashi, I must say from Hashem David, Davash Yesh Lamatirin. The reason why in the second part of the Braisa we will say that the meat or lecha aponim or whatever will not be bottled is because Davash Yesh Lamatirin. We have the famous concept, we learned it extensively in Beitza, that when you have something which eventually will be able to become mutter, we don't say that it will be bottled. Because you say instead of being a vatalist and you're going to wind up possibly eating an iser, better you should wait until it becomes mutter and then eat it, and then eat it with no problem. The classic example of that we learned in Beitza, in the case of Beitza Shanel the Yomtiv, an egg that was laid on Yomtiv. We say instead of don't be mavatalist the roy or b'shishim or what have you, wait till after Yomtiv, then it'll be mutter. The argument Rav Ashi is saying over here, same idea. When it comes to a piece of chatos, which is tomei, nobody is ever going to be allowed to eat it. It'll be an isur lav. So fine. Then in that case, it fell into a bunch of other pieces of chatos. Fine. We'll allow it to be bottled because otherwise there's no way it's ever going to become mutter. Whereas in the sefer, why should we say it's bottled? Let a kayin eat the whole thing. However, the rule is that a davar sheyesh lamaturin will not be bottled even if it's 1,000 times as much hetter. However, the Gemara points out, this that Rav Ashi said is bedusa. Literally, bedusa means a fiction. So, in a few places, we've had this expression before, sometimes instead of bedusa, sometimes instead the Gemara uses the word berusa, which means like something outside, like something that doesn't belong in the Besmedrish. Either way, the idea of it is, before I should explain, this is Rav Ashi himself didn't say this. One of his talmidim misunderstood something that Rav Ashi said and came up with this idea. It's brought chassidus in a bunch of places. That nevertheless, I mean, after all, it is part of Torah. It is you in the Gemara. The Eivishter, it's Chachmaser, Ritzonei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there is this idea, and it's also part of Chachmaser, Ritzonei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it is bedusa, that it's fiction, that it's not true within the Torah the way we learn it. Why not? Laman, because who are you saying? What are you saying? Dovah Shiesh Lamaturin. Who is it going to be mutter to? Ila Kayin Mishra Shari. You're talking mutter to a Kayin. It's always mutter to a Kayin. There's nothing more that it's going to be. Dovah Shiesh Lamaturin means that the person to whom it was ulcer, it now becomes mutter to, like the case of the egg on Yantiv. Here, it was already mutter to the Kayin all the time. Ila Yisrael, Lo'el Mutter. And if you're talking to Yisrael, all the slices are, it's never going to be mutter. It's all chata. Ela Hadar Rav Ashi Vedusa. He said, necessarily we have to say that the statement of Rav Ashi is Vedusa. So anyway, we have several different possible understandings, according to Rosh Lakish, how we can understand that Braisa, that it still fits with his opinion that anything which is also Daraisa cannot be Bato, unless we're saying, first of all, it got dissolved so that it's not the Ain anymore, and second of all, we have the various possibilities of why we might say in certain cases we might be Makel. Now, going back to Besavar, Rabbi Yechanan, Truma, Bezman HaZeh Daraisa, are you telling me that Rabbi Yechanan holds that Truma nowadays is Daraisa, and nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that, for example, when we started talking about the case of the cake of pressed figs of Truma that falls into a bunch of ones of Chulin, that Rabbi Yochanan will say, nevertheless, it can be bottled, even though Truma is Daraisa, because such cakes are not always sold by number, sometimes they're sold by volume. But the implication is that Rabbi Yochanan would say that Truma nowadays, even after the Churban, is Daraisa. Does he really hold that? But we learn in a braisa, a case like this, shteikur, we have this in Pesachim, shteikur, you have two boxes of truma, two boxes of produce, achas rachol and v'achas truma, one has chol and one has truma, v'lefneim shteisi'in, and then in front of the boxes you have two saws, two saw measures, achas rachol and v'achas truma, v'nafl elu v'seich elu, later on you come back and you find that the contents of the two saws have fallen into or been dumped into the two respective boxes. So now you don't know what happened. You know, now a saw is you need 100 times as much chulin to be mivatel truma. Drabanan anyway. According to most Rishonim, this concept is drabanan. The daraisa would be mivatel v'roi. So now what happens if the truma fell into the chulin and the chulin fell into the truma? Then all of them are going to be also to zorim. They're going to be mivatel to kainim. Whereas if we say the chulin fell into the chulin and the truma fell into the truma, fine, the one box of truma is for kainim, and the other one anybody can eat. And the braisa says, harei lamutorim, then the one box of chulin remains mutter. Shani oima truma l'seich truma nafl v'chulin l'seich chulin nafl, because we can say logically that the truma fell into the truma and the chulin fell into the chulin. That so far the braisa ve'amar Rish Lakish. Now on that Rish Lakish says v'hu shirabu
means that
one sa'ah fell into one box and the other sa'ah fell into the other box. We don't know which one is which, but we can assume that the chulin sa'ah fell into the chulin box, and the truma sa'ah, you have a 50-50 chance of being right. But Rish Lakish says, "Who should rabu chulin ala truma? When do we allow that? Only if the contents of the box of chulin are greater than the sa'ah of truma." Why? Because midaraisa, you can be mivatal truma beroiv. Midaraisa, almost anything can be batal beroiv. Or the whole concept that we have of things can only be batal b'shishim, or truma in 100, or lower kalayakim in 200, according to most Rishonim, is only dirabana. The Gemara brings psukim on it in some places. They generally say that it's an asmachta. So if you have, for example, if the box of cholin had 2 pounds of cholin in it, and the saw of truma had 1 pound of truma in it, then fine, we can say since on a midaraisa level that truma would be able to be batal, then fine, we'll allow that. We'll allow ourselves to assume that instead the truma fell into the truma and the chulin fell into the chulin. Whereas Rabbi Yechanan says no, even if the box only contained 1 pound of chulin and the saw contained 1 pound of truma, nevertheless you can assume that each one fell into its respective type. Even though on the midaraisa level, there's no bittul. So, bishleim lo Rish Lakish kasav b'drabanan nami rabuyah u'divinim. So, Rish Lakish, we can understand that he holds when it comes to a matter of drabanan, and Rish Lakish, we said, holds that truma nowadays is only drabanan. So, fine, we can say even in a matter of drabanan, you need to have a majority. You need to have a roiv. You need to have 2 pounds of chulin to be potentially mivatel that saw, to be potentially mivatel that 1 pound of truma. And once you do that, then fine, we allow us to say that therefore no truma fell in there to begin with. It's chulin that fell there, and then there it's truma that fell into the other one. El Rabbi Yechanan Kasha, but according to Rabbi Yechanan, that seems a problem. If he holds truma is daraisa, how could he say that we'll allow such a thing? You only have 1 pound of chulin, and potentially 1 pound of truma fell into it. How can you say that it'll be batal on that basis if he holds that it's daraisa? The answer is Homani Rabbanan. He, Rabbi Yechanan, would answer you that this braisa is according to the Rabbanan. Whereas I say like Rabbi Yossi. Going all the way back to our Mishnah, when Rabbi Yossi had been the one who said in our Mishnah that an androgynous Kohen who's married to a woman, she's allowed to eat truma on his behalf. Why would that be? Because Rabbi Yossi would hold. And we said at the beginning of the Gemara yesterday that Rabbi Yochanan had said not only she's allowed to eat truma, but she's even allowed to eat chaz of a sheik, to eat the portions of shlamim that go to a kohen and his family. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi is the one who holds that truma is daraisa even nowadays. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, I myself don't necessarily agree with that, or the Rabbanon don't agree with that. So the braisa goes according to that. Rabbi Yossi, though, holds that truma nowadays is daraisa. The Tanya b'Seder Olam, because we learn a braisa in Seder Olam. Seder Olam is a collection of braises that goes through Jewish history, basically. A lot of the commonplace facts that we know about Jewish history are not really so obvious from the psukim. So there's a medrash called Seder Olam, which goes through them and explains how the psukim yield the numbers that we're familiar with, how we know that the Jews were 210 years in Mitzrayim, and how we know the Dor HaFlaga was when Avraham was 48 years old, and how we know that the first Beis Hamikdash stood 410 years, etc. All that comes from Seder Olam. And Seder Olam was written by Rabbi Yossi. So in general, we would assume that a braisa from Seder Olam follows his shita. Now, not always. There are times that Tosfos has the Gemara in Nidah, for example, that discusses that sometimes you have something in Seder Olam that doesn't agree with Rabbi Yossi. But here, the assumption is that it does. Anyway, in Seder Olam says, the Pasuk says, Asher Yoshua Besecha V'Yudishto. The Pasuk says, if Eivishto is going to bring you back to Eretz Yisrael, to the land which your forefathers inherited, and you will inherit it. So there's twice in the Pasuk the word Yerusha, which implies Yerusha Rishonah Ushniya Yesh Lahem, so there is a first and a second Yerusha. Ushlish is Ein Lahem. There's not a third Yerusha. Now, what does that mean? There's three times that the Jewish people came or will come back to Eretz Yisrael. There was the first time when they conquered Eretz Yisrael in the times of Yeshua, the second time when they came in the times of Ezra and they built the second Beis Hamikdash, and then there'll be the third time when Mashiach comes. What the Braisa is saying is there had to be a Yerusha Rishonah. There had to be when they first conquered Eretz Yisrael and settled it. That's considered that gave Eretz Yisrael its Kedusha. The mitzvah at Lois Ward started taking effect, but that went out of effect when they went into Golos. When they went into Golos and the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, that Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael went away. They came back in the times of Ezra. They were re-Makadosh Eretz Yisrael. Now the mitzvahs, Aployis V'aretz, including Truma, took effect again. What Seder Olam is saying is there's no shlishis in the sense that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael still continues from then until now. The same Kedusha that they brought back in the times of Ezra still continues nowadays. Whereas the Rabbanan would hold that not. The Rabbanan would hold the same way as the Kedusha expired by the Churban Bayis Rishon, the same way the Kedusha expired by the Churban Bayis Sheni. Tosfos, by the way, brings a different explanation that from Rabbeinu Hananel that Kedusha Rishonah means from Avraham Avinu's time and Shniyah means Yoshua. But the Tosfos says I don't like that explanation. The Rambam, by the way, has an interesting take on it. The Rambam says that the halacha is like you see, there's only a Shniyah once the Kedusha from Ezra remains in effect forever. But he says the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash is different. The Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash never went away b'chlal. Why? Because the kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash depends on the Shechina. The Shechina never left. Me'olam lezol the Shechina from the Chosel. So therefore, the kedusha of that never went away. Whereas the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael depended the first time it depended on them conquering Eretz Yisrael. So once it was conquered from them, once Nebuchadnezzar conquered it from them, then the kedusha went away. The second time it wasn't that they conquered Eretz Yisrael. When they came back in Ezra's time, they didn't conquer Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was ruled over by the Persians. They settled it. Good. From then until now, there are still Jews settling in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's still in effect.
The majority of the Jewish people doesn't have to be in Eretz
Yisrael. Apparently not. Having said that, though, by the way, not everybody agrees. Not everybody agrees with that, and there are in fact Rishonim, there are in fact Poskim, who argue that nowadays the mitzvahs at Lois Bar, it's only the Rabbanim. This is one of the major sources. This is one of the major issues that goes into the whole question of whether the Heter Mechira works for Shemitah. The whole concept that they came up with 100-odd years ago, that for Shemitah, you sell the land to a goy, similar to what we do with Mechiras Chametz, and then therefore you're allowed to work the land. One of the major issues that was involved with that is the question, is Shemitah nowadays Daraisa or Darabanan? If it's Daraisa, maybe you can't use loopholes like that. If it's Darabanan, you could. And for Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Man Tana Seder Olam Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Yechanan said, who is the Tana of Seder Olam is Rabbi Yossi. Very well then, that Daraisa that says that Truma nowadays is Daraisa is according to Rabbi Yossi. The Chachamim don't have to agree with that. So the Braisa about the two boxes and the two saws would be according to the Chachamim that Truma nowadays is only the Rabbanim. Whereas Rabbi Yossi would hold, no, that wouldn't work. But for that reason, therefore, Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah says that Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah would say that would say that there's no difference that an androgynous wife is allowed to eat truma even daraisa and therefore even chazav shayik also daraisa. He's not worried about the suffix for reasons that we'll talk about tomorrow.
There an halacha about whether it's rabbanan or
daraisa? So it depends what poskim you ask. I believe the consensus is that it's daraisa, but there are certainly opinions that it's rabbanan. Yeah. Question is, v'savar Rabbi Yochanan v'drabbanan lo v'inin rabuya? Are you telling me then that Rabbi Yochanan holds that in a matter of drabbanan you don't need a majority? Because what are we saying before? We're saying again, in the case of the two boxes and the two saws, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that if Truma is Dirabanan, he's saying that the Rabbanan against Rabbi Yossi hold that Truma is Dirabanan, and he's saying the boxes don't have to be any bigger than the Suz. Is that so? Vatnan, but we learn in a Mishnah in the Perek Yesh Malin that we learn for a Yartzai. Mikveh sheyesh ba arba'im sa'ah mechubanos, if you have a mikveh that has exactly 40 sa'ah of rainwater in it, nothing sa'ah and nothing sa'ah, and then you put in a sa'ah of other kind of various kinds of liquids. The Mishnah mentions over there mashkin, meperes, various kinds of liquids that in and of themselves don't pass a mikveh. They're not mayim shovim because they're not drawn water, which passes a mikveh if you put three logim of them in. But they're not really kosher. They're not kosher to water for a mikveh either. They're fruit juice or what have you. So we said nothing sav and nothing sav. You put a sav of them into a mikveh and then you take out a sav of the mixture, then it remains kosher. Even though now you don't have 40 sav of water in there, and in principle you might have in there, if everything mixed evenly, you're gonna have slightly less than 40 sav of water in there because part of the 40 sav is gonna be this juice. Nevertheless, it's kosher. The Amar Rav Yehuda bar Shila, Amar Rav Asiya, Amar Rav Yechanan ad Ruboy, and we say and we're saying Rav Yechanan says that this only works until Ruboy. In other words, you can repeat this process. You can put in a sa'ah of, you can pour in a sa'ah of juice. You can pour in a sa'ah of apple juice and then take out a sa'ah of the mixture. And pour in another sa'ah of apple juice and take out another sa'ah of the mixture, etc. Rabbi Yechon is saying you can only do that ad Ruboy, until a majority. My lav din ishtai Ruboy. Doesn't that mean that you have to have that most of the original mikvah has to be left? You can only do that until you have 21 sa'ah of water left. 20 and a fraction, whatever. And that would mean, now the whole point, this concept of nothing sav and nothing sav doesn't only apply to mei peiros, it applies also to mayim shuvim. It applies also to drawn water. That drawn water only passes at mikveh d'rabban. So, if we're saying that, if we seem to be saying that Rabbi Yechon is saying you can only do that until you have, as long as you have a majority of, as long as you can assume that there's a majority of mikveh water left, of rain water, then that would mean, even in a matter of d'rabbanan, you need drive. And then there's why the Lanyushko Ruboy, not necessarily. Rabbi Yechonin may mean that as long as you have half and half, it's still kosher. You just can't have that, there's more mayim shovim or juice or whatever than the original rainwater. But you could have exactly half and half.
How much rainwater has to be?
So we start with 40 sa.
I was 40. So here there's...
Now, there is an interesting little mathematical chat in this. There's a whole calculation on this in the Sefer Merkavos HaMishnah on the Rambam. There's also a discussion about it in one of the Tshuvos of Rabbi Akiva Eger. When you get down to it like this, imagine, let's say we do this. You start with a mikveh of 40. You put in one saw, let's say, of mayim shuvim. Now you're 41 saw. Now, if the water mixes evenly, when you take out one saw, that saw is going to contain, if you divide that saw into 41 parts, 40 of them are going to be from the original mikveh water, and the 41st is going to be mayim shuvim. You do that again, now you're going to have the one you take out is going to be 39 parts mikveh water and two parts mayim shuvim, and so on and so forth. After a while, it comes out, you can do that a lot more than 20 times, and you still have a majority mikveh water. That's what we're saying over here, according to Rabbi Yechonin. Maybe as long as at least half of the original mikveh is left, then you're good. It comes out mathematically that you can do this around 28 times before you end up that most of the mikveh is mayim shuvim, where it would become possible. One other thing about this nothing sub and nothing sub business is we've talked about before earlier in the Masechta about the various ways that mikvahs are constructed. We know that the Chabad Shita, going back to the Rebbe Rashab, is that you should have Borod Agavit Borod. You should have the rainwater underneath and the drawn water, the Mayim Shuvim that you actually tovel in on top, as opposed to the mikvahs that the Velt makes where you have them side by side and then you open up a hole between them. The reason for that is, and the Rabbi Yaakov Landau brings it in his notes on the mikveh from the Rebbe Rashab, is because when they're side by side, you're going to wind up with a nothin sav and nothin sav. The water is going to mix from side to side. Eventually, you may wind up that the oitzer, the meik shamim, does not contain 40 full saw of meik shamim. It may contain less, and you're going to end up having a problem. So if you have one on top of the other, the water is now there. The water has no place to go down because the bottom oitzer is full. Plus the fact the bottom one is cold and the top one is hot, and hot and cold water don't mix that easily, and therefore you're less likely to have an issue.
The hot
tends to stay on top, right? Now other posts can have a problem with that for a different reason that we talked about earlier in the Masech. There's something called kataphoros, where you have the two things are joined together using a slant or on an angle or whatever rather than side by side. So that's a different issue.
That's why
some poskim don't hold of this bird or gavur business. As a practical matter, many mikvahs that are built nowadays by shluchim all over the world, they actually have two oitzeris to make shaman, one on the bottom, one on the side. One you have bird or gavur to satisfy the Rebbe Shabbos shita, and one you have next to each other to satisfy the shita of the other poskim, and that way you're covered. Anyway, the ibur is same, or another possibility. Going back to this business, whether you need roiv or not, yes, Rabbi Yochanan would say you actually need roiv, which would mean in the case of the mikveh, it's not just good enough to have 20 saw of rainwater. You actually have to have that after you finish the nuff and saw the nuff, or saw however many times you're going to do it, you still have 20 and a half or 20.1 or whatever it is. The difference is, The difference is when it comes to the boxes of Cholin and Truma, you're able to say Shani Omer. You have a logical reason to say that the Cholin fell into the Cholin and the Truma fell into the Truma. With a mikveh, you can't say that. With a mikveh, the more it gets mixed up, the more it gets mixed up. As a matter of fact, actually, I should mention, when I was saying that mathematically you can do this 27, 28, whatever it is times, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings in his truva that his son asked him about this and said, mathematically you can do it like 28 times. Why is the halacha you can only do this up to 20 times? And Rabbi Akiva Eger tells him, because who says the water gets fully mixed? You're assuming the first time you take out the saw, it has one part and 41 is Mayim Shovim, and the other 40 parts is Meg Shomim, and then the second time two parts and 41 and so forth. Who says each time you're taking out a saw, it might be a full saw of rainwater? And therefore you can only do it 19 times and then before you end up that you're not gonna have a roiv.
Theoretically it would depend on the time
between the nuff and saw and nuff. So okay, I mean it depends how fast it mixes, yeah.
Well, if the temperatures are different, like you said, it's unlikely they're missing.
No, because when you're talking about when you have an oitzer of hot water on top of an oitzer of cold water, they're not going to mix that easily. But if you take a saw of hot water and pour it into a mikveh of cold water, why would it mix? It'll mix very quickly.
The temperature will change. What's it called? There's a name for it.
They will mix.
It will be a change.
But that's what I'm saying, and it takes time.
Yeah, but not.
That's what you put into water.
Yeah, if you're pouring one into the other, though.
It depends on the difference between.
But whatever. La halacha, we can't assume that they're going to mix that fast. Tanan, okay, let's consider what our Mishnah says. When we're talking about this whole business of Truma, whether it's Raisa or Dirabanan, let's go back a minute to the Mishnah. We learned androgynous noise. We're saying that an androgynous can marry a woman, but Volonis, so we said he can't be married. We consider him to be a man for this purpose, which means we consider him to be a full-fledged man. Now, okay, so actually this Tanan is really going all the way back to the beginning of the Sugya, right after the Mishnah. We started out with the Machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan had said that the androgynous, his wife, can eat any kind of truma, daraisa or drabanan, and can eat chaz of a shayu, the portions of a shlomim that are reserved for a Kayan's family. And Rish Lakish said, no, all she can eat is Truma Drabanan. Now, the Mishnah continues that an androgynous noise, that he can marry a woman. And noise is Mashma Lachtchila. We don't say B'dieved, maybe if he married, then we'll allow it. We're saying Lachtchila, he can go, have Chub of a Kiddushin, and marry a woman. B'dieved would be something like, if an androgynous should Kiddush, if he was Mekaddish, then Kiddush of Kiddushin. Noise implies that Lachtchila can do it. According to Rish Lakish, why? According to Rish Lakish, it seems that it's a suffix. The answer is, okay, Tani Im Nasa. Okay, you can say that according to Rish Lakish, the Mishnah doesn't really mean that he can Lachtchila marry a woman. It means, if he marries her, then fine, we'll accept it. We'll assume that it's a valid marriage. What do you mean? What do you mean, Im Nasa? The Mishnah clearly says Noise, which is a Lachtchila Dika kind of thing. Okay, so again, you're back to the question. If we consider him to be definitely a male, then why, according to Rish Lakish, is there any kind of suffix whether his wife can eat truma? The answer is, according to your own logic, my avaloi nisa, so why would the Mishnah be continuing, but he cannot be married, which is mashma d'eved. which is Mashal B'dieved, that he cannot be married by another man. Ella, my Nisa D'Evet. So no, you have to say that the word Nisa means that even B'dieved, if another man marries him, it's not Chal. It's a man marrying a man, which is no such thing. Noisa Na B'dieved. So therefore, when the Mishnah says Noisa, it can also mean not L'chatzchila, he's allowed to marry a woman, but B'dieved, if he marries her, then it's good. That would be according to Rish Lakish. Amri, but they said no. Loi. Noisa L'chatzchila Mashma. Avala Nisa D'Evet Nami Loi. No, there's actually a difference. The word Noisa implies that The word noise implies that lachatchila he's allowed to marry. The word avalei nisa, you're right, means even b'diyev. So yes, lachatchila he's allowed to marry a woman. We do consider him to be a full-fledged man. Even b'diyev, we say if another man marries him, nothing doing. So you're still back to the question, according to Rosh Lakish. If lachatchila he's allowed to marry, if lachatchila we consider him a man, why can his wife not eat terumah d'oraisa? So the question is back. Muhammad Katani Sefer, but I mean you're saying you want to say that the Tanakama holds that the androgynous is definitely a male. The question is how could you say that? Obviously, it has to be that the Tanakama holds that it's a doubt, and that's why the Shlokish is saying that he can't eat, that his wife can't eat Truma Daraisa, because Mitkatani Sefer. Since the end of the Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer Oymer Androgynous Chayavin Alaskila Kazacher, that Rabbi Eliezer says that if another man has relations with an androgynous, then he's punished with skila, just as if the androgynous was a full-fledged male, because the Tanakama Sapokim Safkale implies that the Tanakama holds it in Suffolk. So you could say that's why Rish Lakish holds that the androgynous' wife can't eat Truma, because it's Suffolk, whether he's a man or not. Rabbi Eliezer would hold that it's a Yavadei Zacher, therefore you can give him skila. Evidently, the Tanakama holds it in Suffolk. He's a Suffolk, can't give a person skila because of the Suffolk. The answer is no, that's not what it means. Bein lamar, bein lamar, mifshit pshitalei. No, you could say that both the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer know for a fact that the androgynous is a male. It could be named skila mishnei mekaymus. And the machloikus between them is rather an androgynous, we're saying by definition, is somebody who has both sets of organs, both male and female organs. The question is, what kind of relations with him, when a man has relations with him, what kind of relations would make that man chayev? Skila mishnei mekaymus. Can there be skila based on two different kinds, based on the two different organs? D'mar sava chayav anol of skila mishnei mekaymus. On the contrary, not that you're thinking that the Tanakama says the androgynous is a suffix, therefore you can't give skila, and Rabbi Eliezer is saying no, he's a vadai. No, both of them are saying he's vadai zacher. Both of them are saying he's definitely a Zachar. The Tanakama is the one who's being more machmir. The Tanakama is saying if a man has relations with an androgynous, whether in his nakvus, whether in his female organ, or in his zachrus, or the way that a man would with another man, then he's chayav skila. Omar sava kezachar, whereas Rabbi Eliezer holds, no, we consider him only as if he was a male. If another man has relations with him, derech nakvusay, he would be potter. Only if he has relations with him, derech zachrusay, the way that a man has relations with a man, would he be chayiv? So that's what it means. Not a question of whether he's a zacher or not. Everybody agrees he's a zacher. So therefore we see the wording of the Mishnah. We can understand the Mishnah better according to Rabbi Yochanan. We do have a way of understanding according to Rish Lakish. We could say that Rish Lakish, according to Rish Lakish, in other words, we would say that the Tanakama is not sure if he's a Zachar or a Keva, and Rabbi Eliezer is saying he definitely is. According to Rabbi Yechanan, we would say both of them are sure that he's a Zachar. The question is only Derech Nachbuse or Derech Zachruse. Amar Rav, let's almost listen to Kami Braisa. In fact, Rav says, we ignore what the Mishnah says when Rabbi Yossi is saying in the Mishnah that an androgynous is considered a vadai zacher and therefore his wife can eat truma. We ignore that mikame b'raisa because we have a b'raisa that contradicts it. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi, androgynous biri b'fnei atzmahu. This is actually a b'raisa. It's a tesefta in Bikurim, but actually in most editions of Mishnayos, there's an extra perek added onto Bikurim. This perek of tesefta, it's printed in most Mishnayos as if it was a perek of Mishnayos. And this appears in it. Rav Yosi, androgynous beri b'fnei atzmahu, that an androgynous is a creature of its own kind. It's not considered really male or female. The Chachamim could not decide whether it's male, whether he's considered male or female, la halacha. So what does that mean? And then we see from that braisa that Rabbi Yossi says he's not definitely a male. So when our Mishnah is saying that Rabbi Yossi is holding he's definitely a male, and according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding anyway, and therefore that his wife can eat truma, no, you can't say that. On the contrary, I mean, usually if you have a braisa and a Mishnah contradicting each other, you usually follow the Mishnah. You ignore the braisa. The Mishnah was carefully edited by Rebbe. Braisas can come from any place. Usually, I mean, Tosefta comes from Rebbe. It's also known to be accurate, but still, we have the usual rule: Rebbe Lashnar Rebbe Minayin Lo. That if Rebbe didn't know something, then where does Rebbe get it from? Because Rebbe is Rebbe's Talmud. Why should we say that you set aside the Mishnah in the face of the Braisa? Adrabi, you should say the Braisa, there's a mistake in the Braisa, and the Mishnah is correct. The answer is, Midashavke Rabbi Yossi Labarzuge, because we see that, we see in the Mishnah you have not just Rabbi Yossi, it's Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon together. In the Braisa, it's only Rabbi Yossi. He abandoned his partner, Shmamina Hodebe, which goes to show that he changed his mind. So the Mishnah is telling us that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon originally held one way. Later on, comes the Braisa and tells us that Rabbi Yossi changed his mind. Shavke means he abandoned. He left the line. So that's Rab's understanding. Rab says then that when it comes to the Shitta of Rabbi Yossi, we follow what it says in the Braisa. Shmuel on the left of the Braisa and becoming Masnissen, where Shmuel says the other way around. You ignore the Braisa in favor of the Mishnah. And the question is the other way around. Adar on the left of the Masnissen becoming Braisa. Why don't we say like Rav that we set aside the Braisa that we set aside the Mishnah in the face of the Braisa? And in fact, we have a logical reason. No, you know, according to Rav, we found a logical reason to say why the Braisa represents Rabbi Yossi's final opinion. We're asking, why don't we say the same thing according to Shmuel? And in fact, we have a logical reason. The Hashamin and the Shmuel, the Chayish Lechidah. We do find elsewhere that we had earlier in the Masechta, in fact, that Shmuel holds when you have a Yochid who is Machmir, when you have an individual opinion who is Machmir on something, then you have to be concerned about it, even if that opinion appears in a Braisa. So why is Shmuel saying that we look at our Mishnah, where Rabbi Yossi rather is allowing the woman, the androgynous wife, to eat Truma, which is a Kula? Why don't we instead look to the Braisa, where we see that he's being Machmir? The answer is Hanin Yilikila Mis Akram Asnissin. When does Shmuel say that rule that we will be choshish for the chumra of a yachid only if that doesn't cause the whole Mishnah to be ignored? If that's going to cause that a whole Mishnah is being ignored, in this case, we would say that we ignore the whole statement in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yossi says that the androgynous wife can eat truma. No, at that point, you don't have to be worried about that. You obviously have to say there's a mistake in the Braisa. Ami Rav Mishmei Rav. They said in the yeshiva of Rav, in the name of Rav, the Gemara is going to explain on Amud Beis, which I guess we'll get to tomorrow, that Ami Bei Rav means Rav Huna, who was a Talmud of Rav. So he said in the name of Rav, Halacha Rabbi Yossi b'androgynous of Hakava. That the halacha is Rabbi Yossi in the matter of androgynous and in the matter of Hakava, in the matter of grafting, which we're going to get to in a minute. By the way, what do we mean that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in androgynous? Do we mean the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi of the Mishnah? Or do we mean like that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi of the Braisa? That is, in fact, the machlokes Rishonim. Rashi over here says it means like Rabbi Yossi of the Mishnah, therefore the androgynous is wife needs Truma. The Rambam, on the other hand, says it means like Rabbi Yossi of the Braisa, that the androgynous is a doubtful situation. We don't know whether he's Zachar or Nekeva. Shmuel says there's two other cases where the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. In the matter of koshi, of labor pains, and in the matter of kiddush, of plants becoming osir as kilaya kezim. What are these four cases? Androgynous hadamor, and the case of androgynous is what we just talked about. Hakava, what's the case of grafting? The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, we learn this in Rosh Hashanah. And noitin vein mavrichin vein makivin, erev shvius. You're not allowed to plant a tree, or mavrichin, which is where you take a branch of a tree and bend it down into the ground and bury the end of it into the ground, so eventually it snaps off the parent tree and becomes a new tree. all over, yeah, all, there's a term for it in English, I don't remember what it is, all over the place in Chassidus, by the way, it explains that that this mavrichid is related to, when we say b'chata Hashem, is related to this idea. We want that the same way as you take the twig and bend it down into the dirt. The same way when we're saying a bracha is we're asking that we're asking that alakus should be bent down and brought down into our world. So ve'en mavrichin, you can't do this avracha. Ve'en mavkivin, you can't graft, which is grafting as you take a branch from one tree and attach it to another tree, and then eventually they fuse together and it produces better fruit. You can't do any of those things erev shviyas on the year before Shemitah. Pachas m'shloshim yayim lefnei Rosh Hashanah, within 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. If you did plant or do avracha or graft during these 30 days, yako, then you need to uproot it. If you did it b'meizid, they counted you. If you did it b'shoigig, they still said it's also because what's going to happen years later, once you finished, once the tree is finished at the years of Orla, people are going to calculate backwards and think that you planted it during Shemitah. Because if you did this Hakava or whatever it is, less than 30 days before Rosh Hashanah, then that year doesn't count anyway. We learned in Rosh Hashanah. It only counts if you did it enough time before Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, people are going to think you did it during Shemitah. Anyway. That's 30 days. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a kolak kovar shayna kalatis v'shloish yamim shubayna kalatis. Rabbi Yehuda says that if a grafting doesn't get grafted on, doesn't actually attach to the tree, within 3 days that it's not going to. So in other words, according to him, all you need is 3 days. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, I'm a shtei shabbos. So Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say you need 2 weeks. According to the opinion, the Tanakhama, who says that you need 30 days, what you actually need is you need 60 days. 30 days for the graft or the habracha or whatever to take effect, and 30 days before Shemitah. According to the opinion of Yehuda, that you need 3 days. Altogether, you need 33 days, because the 3 days have to finish before the 30 days close to Shemitah start. And the Dibra Emesh, Shtei Shabbos, Tzarech Shtei Shabbos, Ushloshim. And according to the opinion, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, that you need 2 weeks, then you really need 2 weeks plus 30 days, 44 days. So we're saying, I'm not. The halacha is Rabbi Yossi. And that is, in fact, the halacha, that if you plant, that as long as you do one of these things more than 44 days before Shemitah, then you're good. And also, as far as the matter of Arla, in that case, that counts as the first year of Arla. But now you only need to wait 2 more years. That's the case of Hakava. So that was Rav that said that the halacha is the Rabbi Yossi in the matter of androgynous and in the matter of hakava. Well, Shmuel Amar b'koshi v'kiddush. Shmuel had said the halacha is the Rabbi Yossi in the matter of koshi and in the matter of kiddush. Koshi, what is that? It's noun. We have like this. Now we note, as background, we know this concept when a woman bleeds during her normal time for 7 days, she's tamei. That's tumas nida. Nowadays, the halacha is much different, but in the original halacha, minatoda is, it doesn't matter how long the bleeding lasted, she waits until the end of 7 days, not Shiva Nikiyim, but rather, for example, the bleeding started on Sunday, let's say, Matzah Shabbos, she goes to the mikveh, and that's that. It doesn't matter whether she bled for 1 day, or 2 days, or 5 days, or what have you. Daraisa. After the 7 days, there's 11 days of Ziva, where if she bleeds 2 days during that time, 1 or 2 days during that time, then she's Shemeres Shem Keneged Yom. She needs 1 day of Tara, and then she goes to the mikveh. If she has 3 or more, then she needs Shiva Nikiyim. According to the Rambam, it goes 7-11, 7-11. It keeps on going that way throughout her lifetime. According to all the other Rishonim, it's after the 11 days. Nothing happens until she has her next nidah. Anyway, now, on top of all of that, the Torah also says that when a woman gives birth, she is Tomei for 7 days for a boy and 14 days for a girl. And after that, she's Tahar. Any bleeding that happens after that, during the next 33 days for a boy or 66 for a girl, she's Tahar. It's a Dam Tahar. After that, after 40 days after the boy is born or 80 days after the girl is born, she brings her Kabanos, and that's that. Now, you can have a case with, you can have a case where the woman was a Zava before she gave birth. This is called Yeledes B'Zayv. And in that case, a Yoledes B'Zayv, there's no concept of Dantara. There's no concept that the bleeding after she gives birth is considered Tahar. It's considered an extension of her Ziva. But it's very common that women start bleeding before they actually give birth. This is called Koshi. Koshi literally means difficulty because, like, she's having labor pains. So the question is, how long before the birth can we assume that the how long before, when she's having contractions and whatnot, how long before the birth can we assume that the bleeding is related to the birth rather than Ziva? So the Tanan, we learn in our Mishnah, Nida, Kama Yehei Kishuya, how long can Kishui be considered to last? Reb Meir says it can be as much as 40 or 50 days. So according to him, even she might be bleeding on and off during these 40 or 50 days before she actually gives birth. It's still considered Dam Kishui, not Ziva. Reb Yehuda Omer Dayachot. Sure, Reb Yehuda says it's enough that you consider that it's Dam Kishui during the month, during the calendar month in which she gives birth. And Rashi explains what we mean, Dayachotcha, is that actually it means you only allow it to be considered Dam Kishui from Rosh Chodesh onward. So if she winds up giving birth on Beis Tevis, then it means she only has one potential day of Kishui. If she ends up giving birth Choftes Tevis, then she has potentially 29 days. But always within that calendar month. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon say that Kishui can never be more than 2 weeks. So Shmuel is saying the halacha is Rabbi Yosef in that. 2 weeks is the maximum. Kiddush, what's the case of Kiddush, of Kilaya Kerem? It's not, and we learn in a mission in Kilayim. HaMesakech Gafnei Agavet Wasa Shachabere. If somebody, now the idea of Kilaya Kerem is you can't have grain or vegetables planted in or near a vineyard. And what we mean by inu niu, there's all kinds of complicated halachas in that. But one of them is you can have cases where it's also deraisa, cases where it's also derabanan. But one case is where the vines actually overhang grain or vegetables, or whatever. If somebody actually takes his vine and makes it hang over somebody else's tevura, over the neighboring field, Hareza Kiddush, he makes a Kaddush, meaning also Bahana, it has to be burnt, and he's responsible for it, he's going to have to pay the guy for the damages. Give it a mayor, that's what a mayor says. But Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon Ogim, Ein Adam Oysa Dava Sheinu Shalai. A person cannot ask for something that doesn't belong to him, so therefore, no. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon are saying, no, the grain does not become Oysa. If it was your own grain, sure, it would become Oysa because you intended to do it, but it's somebody else's. And it's a matter of, Tosfos explains that here it's a matter that depends on machshava, because in fact you can have the Mishnah and Kilayim there discusses cases where, for example, you notice this Kilayim in the vineyard and you say, you know what, I can't get to it right now, but I'm going to get to it soon, and then in certain cases it remains mutter. So the same way over here. Since it depends on machshava, you can't ask for somebody else's thing with machshava. Obviously, if it was something that involved mice, if you take meat and put it if you take milk and put it into your friend's pot of cholent, obviously it's going to become also. That's a matter of mice, so we're not talking about that. Should go to Avon Meyer. Continue to make the best of the show.